Hello and welcome everyone to Leaders in Elder Care, the interview series designed to share with you some of the many people who are doing great things to change the face of elder care as we know it. I'm Ryan Malone, founder of Inside Elder Care and your host of the Leaders in Elder Care show today. Before we start, I'd like to remind you to subscribe to the podcast. You can do so in two ways. One is to go to the Leaders in Elder Care website, and in the top right-hand corner, you'll see a subscribe link. The other way is on iTunes to search podcasts for Leaders in Elder Care, and you'll see the normal iTunes subscription button. Let's go ahead and get started. Joining us today is Dr. Kevin O'Neill. Kevin is the medical director for Brookdale Senior Living, one of the largest senior housing providers in the United States. Kevin practiced and taught geriatric medicine for 27 years and is a graduate of Boston College and Georgetown University School of Medicine. He completed his internship for internal medicine at the Washington Hospital Center and his residency at the University of Massachusetts Medical Center. He was formerly an assistant professor of medicine at the University of Massachusetts Medical Center and is currently a clinical professor in the Department of Aging at the University of South Florida. He's certified by the American Board of Internal Medicine and holds a certificate of added qualifications in geriatric medicine and is a fellow of the American College of Physicians and a member of the American Geriatric Society and the American Medical Directors Association. Dr. O'Neill is a co-editor and contributing writer to the Optimal Aging Manual, which Art Linkletter has called the greatest masterbook for the boomers. How are you doing today, Kevin?
Doing great, Ryan. It's great to be with you.
Thanks for spending the time with us today. So I saw you at the Brookdale Brain Symposium out in LA a few months back and have been looking forward to our chat ever since.
Yeah, it was an exciting time. It was a great crowd that we had and really enjoyed it tremendously.
Yeah, I know I learned a great deal. How did you get involved in brain fitness?
Well, I have always felt as a geriatrician that our wellness was not just our bodies. It's also our minds and our hearts and our souls and our sense of purpose and meaning. All of us need to have a reason to get up in the morning, no matter how old we are. When our careers are over, perhaps it's a volunteer activity, perhaps it's a hobby, but something that gives us a zest for life and also our relationships, the people we love. We're now learning that social engagement is a more potent predictor of longevity than one's age or medical conditions. And I really felt that brain fitness speaks to the intellectual dimension, but all these dimensions of wellness are dynamic. They interact with each other. So what we do in one dimension profoundly influences the others. And I think that based on the recent studies that have shown that people's number one health fear is for those over age 60 is Alzheimer's disease, that really looking at things that we can do proactively to reduce our risk would be something of great interest. And that's been confirmed by the attendance that we've had at these symposia around the country.
Maybe can you just take a second for the folks that haven't been to one of those? Maybe you could explain a little bit the format and the kinds of things that you share with the attendees?
Yes, what we do is we collaborate with one of the academic institutions. For example, in Jacksonville, Florida, we collaborate with the Mayo Clinic and the City of Jacksonville. In Dallas, Texas, we collaborated with the University of Texas. Of course, in California, we collaborated with UCLA. And what we ask is a researcher from one of those institutions to speak about the latest research related to Alzheimer's disease, potential new therapies, the vaccines and so forth that have been in the process of being evaluated. And then I specifically address in my presentation the lifestyle factors that we know are modifiable that can reduce our risk for dementia in later life. In addition, we have a number of breakout sessions, usually between the two major presentations, a number of breakout sessions where people can look at various things that have been shown to promote brain health, including proper nutrition, the role of computer-assisted brain games, other types of exercises. We know that physical activity has a profound effect on brain health. And in fact, I think most of us are aware that keeping our mind stimulated is important, but nothing has a more powerful protective effect on our brain than keeping our bodies moving. So we actually have some demonstrations by physical trainers and physical therapists about easy-to-do, fun exercises that are helpful. Many people enjoy playing with the Wii by Nintendo, which actually has a fit program, but even some of the games that require movement, like the tennis game and the bowling game, do require some physical activity, so all that qualifies. My feeling has always been that it has to be fun. If it's not fun, we're not going to do it.
You talk about the Wii Fit. I know it was a harsh reality to my ego when I played it for the first time and I played the boxing game, and my wife just crushed me. And she still won't let me hear the end.
Yeah, it's a challenge.
So where is the medical profession today in terms of brain fitness and memory issues? Like, you know,
well, as you know, Ryan, that we don't have a cure for Alzheimer's disease, unfortunately.
Yep.
Many researchers are working on it, but we have identified certain risk factors that we have control of. I mean, there's some risk factors we don't have control over. Age itself is a risk factor, for example. The prevalence of Alzheimer's disease doubles every 5 years after age 65. So it's 1 to 2% at 65, 2 to 4% at 70, and it rises. So by the time someone's 90, it's close to 40 to 50%. And so we can't modify our age. We can't modify our genetics. And some people do have a genetic predisposition. There are certain genes that may confer a higher risk. But the vast majority of people who get the disease don't have those genes, you know. So we've recognized that there are certain modifiable risk factors. Many of these are the same risk factors that we know affect or cause heart disease, you know, cholesterol, high blood pressure,
mm-hmm.
diabetes, cigarette smoking, you know, the role of nutrition. So, you know, doing those things that we know are good for the heart are also good for the brain. But we also know that there are other risk factors for dementia in later life. Such as depression and social isolation. And so looking at things that we can do to keep our emotional state up. Now, obviously, one good way to do that is through physical activity. When we are moving, we release a hormone called endorphin, which is a natural pain reliever. It's also a natural antidepressant. More recent studies have shown that regular physical activity will help keep up the brain levels of serotonin. And we have a whole class of drugs that do that. Drugs like
mm-hmm.
Prozac and Zoloft, Paxil, Effexor, but physical activity can help do it naturally. Now, it's not to say that those drugs aren't necessary in some cases. Some people go through some very difficult times and may need the drugs, but perhaps by having them get physically active, we can use the lowest effective dose of the drug and maybe even eventually get some off them in time. But we also know that a good positive attitude, you know, what we say to ourselves is so important. So often, the things we say are negative, and my feeling is if we can, you know, keep up a good positive self-talk, you know, that can really make a significant difference in how we feel from day to day. We also know that a good sense of humor, you know, humor not only makes us feel better, but more recent studies have shown that humor and laughter can have a profound effect on our immune system, make us more resistant to infection and other more serious diseases.
Have you ever followed any of the work from Richard Taylor?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, and, you know, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Richard, you know, look, you know, having been diagnosed with it himself and having had a background in psychology, and I think that, you know, his inside story is just profound, and, yeah, he's a remarkable individual.
Yeah, you know, I just I interviewed him last week, and I just finished writing the blog posting for his interview yesterday, and I probably learned 10 things that are beyond the scope of this conversation that I had no idea, and his story is just absolutely, you know, fascinating. He's such a courageous guy that it was really enjoyable for me. So what kind of things in your role at Brookdale are you doing to try to address these issues?
Well, as the medical director for Brookdale, I do work with a team. We call it the Optimum Life Team. Optimum Life is the brand name that Brookdale has given its culture of wellness. It is not a program. Optimum Life is a kind of a culture of wellness, but it embraces those six dimensions of wellness that we talked about, the physical, emotional, purposeful, social, spiritual, and intellectual dimensions of wellness, because I truly believe that to be healthy, happy, and well, we need to have opportunities and programs in each of these dimensions because they do support each other. So when it comes to brain health, a big part of what I promote is a good diet. We now know that the Mediterranean-style diet, which is rich in whole grains, fruits, and vegetables, you know, the berries, for example, like blueberries, cranberries, strawberries, raspberries, they're all a rich source of an antioxidant, a potent antioxidant called quercetin that actually can protect brain cells. We also know that the fish that we recommend for the omega-3 fats, salmon and mackerel, sardines, lake trout, herring, those are also very good, not only for our heart and blood vessels, but for our brain. We know that the omega-6 fats, which are in walnuts and almonds and peanuts, are also a good source of these good fats. I remember years ago we used to think that nuts should be used sparingly because they were a fatty food, but there is a definite difference between good fats and bad fats, and nuts and fish happen to be a source of good fats, and the fats that we want to avoid are the trans fats. Those are the ones that are solid at room temperature. So, some of the baked goods that we have that are made with trans fats and fried foods, we have to be careful of those. We do know that vegetable oils are good. Olive oil and sunflower oil, safflower oil, canola oil, those are all good sources of the good fats as well. Interestingly, recently a study came out that's quite fascinating. So those who like coffee, this is actually good news. I happen to like my morning cup of Java, so a study that was appeared in the Journal of Alzheimer's Disease in January was a longitudinal study looking at folks in midlife and their coffee consumption. And what they found is that those who drank 3 to 5 cups of coffee a day through midlife significantly reduced their risk for Alzheimer's disease in later life almost by 65%. And that was just amazing to me. In the study group, some people have asked me, well, what about tea? And they didn't have too many tea drinkers in the group, but there were a few. And it didn't seem to have the same benefit. And it's been known in research labs that caffeine does actually have a potent effect in reducing deposition of amyloid plaques in the brains of laboratory animals. And so this is the first study that I've seen in humans where it's shown to be of such significant benefit. Now, obviously more studies will be required on this, but it's kind of exciting to see that study that was conducted over such a long period of time.
That works for certainly. I guess that means I'm safe because I drink a ton of coffee. So when they say 3 to 5 cups, though, they mean 3 to 5 like 8 ounce cups,
yeah,
as opposed to 3 to 5 20 ounce.
About a cup, we're talking about 8 ounce. Most of our mugs that we have probably have 3 cups in them.
Okay.
So I think that when we talk about 3 to 5 cups, we could say either three to five 8 ounce cups, or a couple of big mugs. So another interesting item that's being looked at is curcumin, which is an ingredient in turmeric, and that's what makes curry yellow. It was noticed in India that there wasn't such a prevalence of Alzheimer's disease in India. So it's possibly that perhaps turmeric had something to do with it. And so in the laboratory, it seems to have had some benefit, and I think pretty soon there'll be some human trials looking at this. But right now, if you like curry, that may be a good thing as well. So, that's one of the things in terms of diet. The other thing that we're heavily promoting in our communities is the whole aspect of physical activity. In fact, our whole theme for Optimum Life last year was movement is medicine, and basically recommending the guidelines that have been advanced by the American Medical Association and the American College of Sports Medicine. And these are now national guidelines that everyone over the age of 60 should be getting 30 minutes of moderate physical activity on most, if not all, days of the week. And by moderate activities, we could say anything that we could carry on a conversation while we're doing it. So walking would be the thing that's most practical for most older adults, but getting on a stationary bike at a reasonable level would be a reasonable activity. Gardening and dancing, those have all been shown to be quite good. Shuffleboard, playing with Nintendo's Wii, as we mentioned. But what's new to the recommendations this year is that we should all be doing strength training as well. And that would mean either weights, which can start out with maybe 1 or 2 pound weights and gradually build up, or could be resistance bands like TheraBands or special exercise machines. But what I tell folks, if they've not been active before, number one, check with your doctor to make sure it's safe to start. And number two is you don't have to achieve those levels right off the bat. Maybe start a little slowly, maybe start with walking 10 minutes 3 times a week, gradually build up until you reach the goal of 30 minutes on most, if not all, days of the week.
So, so you guys are really busy. So maybe you can share some success stories with us. How is it benefiting some of the residents that you have?
Well, I know last year we had it was really a great story. One of our residents who had been in pain related to spinal stenosis, and she also had been getting a little down in the dumps. She lived in one of our communities in Chicago because, she'd been relatively immobile and sedentary and couldn't engage socially with other people as much as she'd like. And she also had some underlying COPD, but she started on her physical activity program and worked with some therapists through the course of it. And within a year now, she's totally pain-free and walking 2 miles a day without shortness of breath. So that's very exciting. She's also noticed a profound effect on her mood, and she feels that her concentration and focus have improved. So I think these are great, great stories. We've also noticed in our even in our Alzheimer's communities, Brookdale has a large number of dementia care units specifically devoted to people with Alzheimer's and other forms of dementia. And movement is medicine is part of their programming as well. And so many of our lifestyle instructors have noticed that there's been an improvement in behaviors. Some people seem to be, I mean, again, we're not curing the disease, but there may seem to be some transient cognitive improvement in these folks. And that's been borne out in some research studies as well, is that physical activity, even in folks with dementia, can help control behaviors, and there may be even some transient cognitive improvements.
Huh, wow, that's really interesting. Where do you see, if you look forward, where do you see brain fitness headed?
Well, I think obviously everyone's looking with anticipation at, you know, some of the research. You know, unfortunately, the anti-amyloid therapies have been somewhat disappointing. These are the drugs that were targeted at the deposition of this toxic protein in the brain, which a lot of people feel is important to the, you know, to the whole pathology of the disease.
Is that what they called plaque?
Yes.
Okay.
And unfortunately, these anti-amyloid therapies haven't met with the success that we had hoped for. So many researchers are pursuing other lines of investigation. So so obviously there's going to be tremendous interest in research, because a lot of folks looking for a cure, because if we don't find a cure, it's anticipated that the prevalence of Alzheimer's disease will go from the current estimates around 5 million people affected to over 14 million by the middle of the century, you know, because we're going to have a silver tsunami with the advent of the boomers into the over 65 age group. So a lot of folks work looking at the research. But one of the things that I vigorously stress is, you know, there are certain things, like we talked about, physical activity, diet, social engagement, emotional state, finding something that gives you a sense of purpose and meaning. These are modifiable risk factors. These are things that we can do something about and that we have control over. So, you know, we want to try to do everything that we can that's under our control. One of the things that we've done at our conferences is I actually hand out a page of affirmations, you know, affirmations that I've made myself in each of the dimensions of wellness. And it's important to put them in the present tense, because basically what you're doing is alerting your brain that you're committed. You know, instead of saying, I'm going to start exercising 20 minutes three times a week, you say, I am exercising 20 minutes three times a week, and specify exactly what that physical activity is going to be. The more specific and precise you can make it, the more you're telling yourself, not only you're telling your brain, but your you know, your whole emotional system, that you're committed to the activity. And basically looking at every single dimension of wellness and looking at what you can do in a positive way that can affect brain health, even in the spiritual dimension, because studies have shown now that, you know, tying into something that gives us a sense of hope and meaning and comfort, something that kind of suppresses the me center in your brain, you're less likely to be focused on your own problems and you're more focused on others, and that's actually very healthy for us. You know, it reduces our stress level. Studies have shown now that stress itself is toxic to the brain. What happens when we're stressed, we release a stress hormone called cortisol, which actually damages the brain cells in the hippocampus. This is the area of the brain that where our memories are stored. And so we want to do all we can to keep our emotional state up. And anything that we can do to keep that stress under control is vitally important.
Is the cortisol issue caused by just underlying stress, like worry, or is it caused by more adrenaline, fight or flight kind of stress?
Well, it's not acute situational stress. I mean, all of us go through periods where, you know, either finances or job or other family issues may cause some transient situational stress. What we really want to get away from is the kind of the chronic worry, the chronic stress day after day after day. So it's really chronic stress and worry that can cause problems. In fact, more recently, research is showing that there can actually be a dysregulation of glucose in the brain related to this. And many folks have called Alzheimer's disease type 3 diabetes, you know, because of that glucose dysregulation. So, you know, anything that we can do, as I said, that keeps stress levels down, regular physical activity, good positive self-talk, good, you know, staying socially engaged with friends who are supportive of us, tying in with our spiritual side, finding something in your life that gives you a sense of purpose and meaning, all those things can be really helpful.
Well, I appreciate you sharing all that. I know that that was a really condensed version of what I heard a couple months ago, and I know that there was a lot of recommendations and sharing of data. I think that that's going to be really useful to the listeners. If I step aside from brain fitness for just a second, what other kinds of things from a medical perspective are you working on at Brookdale in your role? Or from a dementia perspective, Alzheimer's.
Well, one of the things I recognize, Ryan, is that you know, we really did have a living laboratory in our communities doing some great quality research. Brookdale is the largest senior housing provider in the United States, with 550 communities in nearly 38 states, and we have 52,000 residents and over 30,000 staff. And so I recognized that we had a great opportunity to do some research that could significantly impact geriatric care in this country. So a few years back, our CEO, Bill Sheriff, is just a tremendous man, saw the potential that we had to make a difference. And Brookdale funded the development of a new nonprofit foundation called the Institute for Optimal Aging. And this nonprofit institute is for the benefit of everybody, not just Brookdale, but other senior housing providers, other senior service organizations. And it has three major goals. One is research and education related to issues that affect older adults and their families. The second is looking at ways that we can collaborate with other senior service providers and senior service organizations. And third is disseminating what we learn to the general public. So what we've done in the course of the few years since the Institute was founded is developed a number of academic collaborations that would really speak to issues that older adults are interested in. For example, we're working now with the University of North Carolina on a program that may help family members deal with the transitions of their loved ones into assisted living or retirement communities or skilled nursing. Because often caregivers get very conflicted about their roles. So, we're really interested in the whole caregiver issue. There are currently 50 million caregivers in the United States, and we're looking to work with other individuals and groups that have an interest in this area. Another project that we're going to be working on, it's been in development, which is quite exciting, is called RISE. And RISE stands for Retirees in Service to the Environment. And what we did is we trained older adults who were looking for something that gave them a sense of purpose to engage in environmental related issues. And we did this in collaboration with Cornell University and with the Senior Friendship Center in Sarasota, Florida. And basically what we did is we had these 12 older adults who agreed to participate go through an 8-week program of education related to environmental issues. Mm-hmm. They basically became skilled environmental volunteers. We had tremendous support from the local environmental agencies in Sarasota County, you know, such as Moat Marine Labs, the Marie Selby Botanical Gardens, the Sarasota State Park, the Sarasota Bay Estuary Program, Crowley Museum. It was really wonderful. And these organizations love having skilled volunteers, people actually trained to be knowledgeable about these environmental issues. And what we were studying on the volunteers, the impact it had on their quality of life, and if we studied them long enough, I suspect we'll find it also has some positive health outcomes. But I think this is something that hopefully in the not-too-distant future we can replicate in other communities throughout the country, because I think you know, there's a huge untapped resource out there for these types of issues, and so many people are interested in, you know, ways that we can help and preserve the environment. And I think it would be very good for the folks who are participating in the program.
Yeah, you know, I a couple months ago I interviewed a gentleman, and named Sheldon Kretschner, and he had a group that did something similar, but he took seniors in local communities and trained them as kind of life coaches for kids that were getting on the wrong track.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And, they're getting ready to turn it back over to HUD to manage it, but basically the same thing, right? It gives them a sense of purpose. It you know, helps the community. It, in some senses, can actually employ some people. And he just had some fascinating stories, although not environmental like yours, but in a different way where they were just making a difference. And I think a lot of it is because we don't, in the United States, think of seniors as kind of the wise elders like a lot of countries do.
Right.
What a great resource we have.
I mean, as I've toured around our communities, I mean, the people you meet, I mean, we have Nobel Prize winners. We have former CEOs of industry and teachers and public health nurses and doctors and lawyers and engineers. I mean, it's just incredible the resource that's there, and so many of them are, you know, willing to give back that I think, you know, it would be a great resource for us, a natural resource that we have that we can tap into to make a difference in the lives of a lot of people.
Yeah, that's why I started a storytelling website called Portrait of Our Parents, and that was the whole purpose, was that I ran into, at my mom's assisted living, I ran into a gentleman who I played high school football with his son across the country in Virginia, and, you know, he was just known as kind of an old guy at the community, and he had a touch of dementia. And when I talked to him, he used to be a Secret Service agent for like three presidents, and it reminded me that as we make the mistake that when people get older, they we kind of group them in that old people, quote-unquote, category, but they have these really rich lives. So I started this storytelling site. You'll hear about it at the end of the interview.
It's really wonderful. In fact, a good friend of mine in the near future is going to be actually putting a book together of life lessons that we can learn from these folks, which I think will be just very inspiring, you know.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, very cool. So if people want to learn more about Brookdale's medical research or any of the brain fitness programs or yourself, where would they go?
Well, we have a website. It's called brookdaleliving.com, www.brookdaleliving.com, all one word. And on the site, there's a tab called Optimum Life, which gives some resources there. Also, I have a monthly blog. It's a live blog that we do for our residents, but also their families, and we've opened it up to the public. So if people are interested in, submitting some questions live, we do that once a month. In fact, the next one we're going to be doing is on a week from Wednesday, which is
19th.
Related to sleep disorders. Yeah, it's going to be on the 19th at 1 o'clock Eastern time. And every month we had one that was on brain fitness, another one that was on physical activity, another one on heart disease and so forth. So every month we kind of pick a topic and then invite people to submit questions. Also, the Institute is in the process of formulating the website. That is optimalaging.com, all one word, optimalaging.com. And there'll be more information on that in the very near future as well.
Cool, very cool. Well, thanks for your time. We really appreciate it. We appreciate you being on the show, and we certainly appreciate you being a leader in elder care.
Well, I appreciate your interview, Ryan. I really applaud you on what you're doing and wish you a lot of success in the future.
Thanks, I really appreciate it. So for our listeners out there, a reminder, be sure to check out two sites, Inside Elder Care, which is a by families, for families approach to help families deal with elder care issues. It's at www.insideeldercare.com. And Portrait of Our Parents, a place that you can share with the world the unique memories that make your loved ones who they are. Reachable at portraitofourparents.com. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Have a great day, and I hope you come back and listen soon.